Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
If you're diabetic.
Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies' profile. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Chad here, your hosts for this weekend's show, as well as your hosts on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, The KE Report. Please, everyone, be sure to go back through our website and podcast, listen to the daily editorials and company updates that we recorded, more touching base on markets and any big picture themes that our guests noted. On this weekend show, we are going to, again, stick a lot big picture for especially recapping some of the key meetings that happened this week, as we are going to kick off the show here with Mark Chandler. And then in the back half of the show, going to get, I think, a little bit more focused on some of the markets, but it's all about, at least for a lot of our investors, what's going on in the resource sector. So that's going to come in the second half of the show. As I mentioned, we are chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also editor of the Mark to Market website. Now, Mark, a number of different big meetings that happened this week. We had Jackson Hole with Jerome Powell speaking at the end of the week. But earlier in the week, we had the BRICS meeting. And what came out of that BRICS meeting was adding new members. I know some people were looking for some news on a potential gold-backed currency, but really the meeting seemed to be all about if or if not to add new members. And at the end of the week, they did add some new members. So, Mark, recap that BRICS meeting and what stood out to you, please.
Yeah, sure. So it's interesting, of course. You know, this is like something like the 7th or 8th BRICS summit. This one had attracted a lot of attention, partly, I think, because of sort of this echo chamber in the social media about an alternative currency, an alternative token to settle trade. And as you mentioned, Corey, I think the outcome is really that it's going to grow, and it's going to grow significantly in terms of six countries invited to join, and a few more next year. And so when you think about like what a group it represents, it's getting close to like say 40 or 45% of GDP, 30% of world trade. So it does have some heft, but I think that sort of begs the question is what is it? Is it a bloc? Is it an alliance? What is it? And I don't think it's clear yet. And so I don't really see this as a market factor. I think it drew a lot of attention. But I don't really see it as a market factor. If they were able to act in unison around some issue, that would be a different story. But I see a lot of like conflicting rivalries, and I see unclear about what they're really doing.
Yeah, Mark, I think that's a pretty solid takeaway, because so far they haven't really expressed what they're actually doing as a group. What does seem to be moving the markets more is the market's infatuation with what central banks are doing. And so we should bring up that with Powell on the mic at Jackson Hole today, and then other central banks also there, there's a lot of news coming out of that, but it doesn't seem like much has changed there. What's your key takeaway from the Jackson Hole summit so far?
So far, I'd say we haven't really learned anything new. I think there was such a big buildup for Powell's speech today, and I think it lasted about 16 minutes or so. And at the end of the day, I don't really see him breaking any new ground. I sort of heard it to be a broad summary of policy and economic trends since his last speech at Jackson Hole. He didn't really give us more insight into what the Fed's going to do. The market has slowly crept up this week. The odds of a Fed hike in September, they meet September 20th, but the odds are still low at about 20% or so. They were about 10% a week ago. I think that the focus really ought to be on the November meeting rather than September meeting. And there we've seen the odds creep up a little bit better now than 50%, actually getting closer to 60% now on the chance of a November hike. You know, because the Fed hiked in July, no meeting in August, the September is really the, it would be back-to-back meetings. And there's nothing that suggests to me from Fed officials that there's so urgent pressure now that they acknowledge that we're in restrictive territory to have to raise rates at back-to-back meetings. So I'd still say November, and that lets the compromise then with some of the doves who've been saying, talking about an extended pause. But my sense, though, is that the real challenge is that the market had it both ways. You know, this week the Atlanta Fed revised up its GDP tracker to 5.9%. Even if they're 50% wrong, I mean, they don't have really that much data for August yet, and so they're still early on in the data collection cycle. And so even if they're off by half, we're still looking at an acceleration from Q2. And I think that's what I'm really watching for next week. That'll help shape expectations for Fed policy. Two big data points. One is the personal consumption expenditures. And this is the retail sales measures say a little bit more than a third of what U.S. consumers buy, partly because it doesn't really pick up that many services. The personal consumption expenditure is a much broader measure. And the median forecast in Bloomberg surveys for a 0.7% increase. It would be the largest since January and would suggest that demand, which Powell spoke to, remains strong. However, at the end of the week, September 1st, the U.S. is going to report the jobs data, and there it seems quite clear that the employment market is slowing. The issue I think that Powell raised is it's slowing fast enough to reduce demand and reduce price pressures. And I think that the risk to me is that we might see a later in September, the second consecutive monthly increase in headline U.S. CPI.
It seems like everybody listening to Powell, and we all know how much the Fed can move markets, especially when they do pivot or if they pivot. Everyone's trying to get some long-term forecast from Powell and from the Fed, but he's consistently told us that they are going to see how this trickles through to the consumer, to the markets. Yes, the Fed is market-dependent, but look, the Fed has just gone through a very aggressive tightening cycle, and the economy hasn't collapsed on itself. It might be coming, but as of right now, the Fed has given themselves some cover, or at least I think they have. Since they have hiked rates so much, well, you can argue that they do have some tools at their disposal if we do get a big market pullback. Mark, how do you try to filter through all this talk from Powell and all the markets saying, oh, we're predicting this much of a rate hike or this much of a rate cut a year out? It does impact markets, but again, the Fed's just going to be sitting on the sidelines here for, it sounds like, as long as they can.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what you say makes sense to me. I think that's why the September dot plots, the summary of economic projections, is going to be so important. I can see how the Federal Reserve will have to revise up growth again, probably revise down unemployment. But remember that when you look at those Fed's the dots for policy for Fed funds next year, remember in June, the Fed assumed they hiked rates twice. So far, they've only hiked rates once here in the second half. But the median dot looks for four cuts next year from after the two that they anticipated in the second half of this year. So I think the Fed has encouraged the markets to think that the sequence of events would be something like this. High nominal interest rates, and we're making new highs this week on, say, the U.S. 2-year and the 10-year. And as inflation falls, that means the real rate is higher. And the higher real rate, that's what really is a measure of the restraint on the economy, is where the inflation adjusted rate is. So in effect, what's happening is that the Fed is raising rates at the short end, as you know, and what's happening then is that the inflation is falling, and that's raising the real rate at the long end, which acts as a brake on the economy. And so I think that the Federal Reserve thinks then that as real rates rise, they'll be able to cut rates just to keep the real rates sort of at status quo levels. So I do think Fed's going to be cutting next year. I think the issue is when.
Well, and that's what the market's trying to predict too, right, is when they will start cutting. Mark, we're out of time for this segment. Having you back on next segment. So everyone, stick around. We're going to be right back.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
It's obvious. We're being let down by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media are distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the real concerns of American families. Countries we're at odds with are hoarding food, financial systems are strained, and supply chains remain too fragile. We can tell something is coming, so we're preparing. Folks are getting into self-reliance and investing in emergency food storage. And My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, makes it easy for you to have peace of mind knowing you're prepared. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure some emergency food kits. There's a dozen to choose from that contain tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one food kit for each family member. And while you're there, stock up on water filtration, heirloom seeds, and emergency gear, too, at MyPatriotSupply.com. It's time to prepare today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Who listens to radio at night? EMTs, truck drivers, law enforcement, and many other hardworking people just like you, buying products and services from companies just like yours. Many companies owe their success to radio. It's the engaging medium. Call 877-996-4327 or email advertise@gcnlive.com. That's advertise@gcnlive.com.
What if Extendivite really works, but you find that hard to believe and you spend precious time looking for someone to say, just try it? I have my help today because of Extendivite, and if I did not take a leap of faith and try it, well, I would be on disability today. Take one bottle of Extendivite as suggested for 60 days to find out for yourself. No need to stop any other meds you may be on. You know by now that they are not working for you. Before the 60 days are up, I know that you will feel Extendivite working for you and will want to take another bottle. Life is too short. Get your Extendivite today. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Tehebo Tea Club's original Pure Pau d'Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system. And it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. We are continuing to chat with Mark Chandler, Managing Partner at Bannockburn Global Forex. Now, Mark, we talked a lot about, well, the BRICS meeting and Fed policy, as well as Jerome Powell's Jackson Hole talk. let's focus a little bit more on currency moves, because the U.S. dollar has been quite strong over the last about 5 to 6 weeks. It hasn't taken out any of the recent lower highs. However, boy, oh boy, it is getting very close in that 104 and change level on the dollar index. What have you noticed in the currency markets, not just in the U.S. dollar, but broadly? Anything that investors should take note of?
So yeah, so this has been an important week from a, like I say, from a price action point of view. The euro fell through 108 for the first time, I want to say since middle of June, and that's below the 200-day moving average, which comes in there as well, about 108.05. This will be the first time since the end of last year, I want to say in November of last year, that the euro has traded below its 200-day moving average. So I think that, once again, we're in this position of divergence, where the U.S. economy looks fairly strong, while the Eurozone, and in fact, not only the Eurozone struggling, but today the Bundesbank, the German central bank, said that Germany, the biggest economy in the Eurozone, may stagnate for another quarter here. So we did see this breakdown. We got to wait for the close, though, because we can have this intraday penetration. And we fell down to about 107.65, but still, it's sort of return to the 108 area. Sterling had a similar thing happen. You know, we've been, for the most part, holding above 126, giving some intraday closes below it. Today we fell to a little bit below 125.50. So that's a serious break, a half a cent move. We're holding below that 126 now. But if that move is sustained, 124 is the next target, and there's potential. We can even go down to about 120. I'm looking at, for those of you who follow the charts, I'm looking at a potential head and shoulders top in sterling, with that neckline at 126. It's about a 6 to 7 cent pattern. So take a look at that. We don't really often see such nice head and shoulder patterns in the FX market, but there looks like one in sterling. So I'm concerned too. You know, the Canadian dollar moves above 136. But I should say the U.S. dollar moves above Canada 136, and it brings into the frame the April and May highs around 136. Call it 50 to 60 area or 60 to 70 area, and so we're brushing along that as well. I'm not yet sure that we're going to have this as a big breakout. A lot of the momentum indicators are stretched for the dollar, but it's hard to fight it when you have rising interest rates.
Mark, what's actually driving these currency moves? Is it actual economic data, or is it simply, again, central bank expectations?
Yeah, so I would not put those two as like mutually exclusive. I think that the central bank expectations, like with the Fed, is being driven by expectations of the economy. And so I think that the market is really taking rates up faster than the Fed is. You think about what's happened in recent weeks. And also what concerns me too along these lines is market positioning. I was looking at the futures positioning in both the 2-year and 10-year, and we're near historic extremes for both of them. To me, this is a continuation of the trend move, and what I'm waiting for is some clear sign of capitulation. And looking at today's price action, looking at this week's price action, I don't think it's a capitulation trade yet.
Mark, speaking of capitulation, a lot of people were expecting, and we've talked about this with you a number of times on a lot of our guests, we're expecting the recession to already have arrived this year. Thus far, it seems like the market has been far more resilient. The economy has been far more resilient. The consumer has been far more resilient. There are some cracks under the surface, but how does this worry about a contraction coming affect the markets? And is this just a bear market rally within a larger bear market? Or are we seeing the markets actually have a sea change and just dust off the fears of a recession altogether?
Well, it's true, Chad, that many economists, many of the big banks, have revised their forecasts and no longer look for a recession. And to me, that's not a good sign. That is a type of capitulation. You know, the people have been, like you say, talking about a recession since early last year. We had those first two quarters of last year contraction, but since then, growth has been generally strong. And not only has it been strong, but as Powell mentioned, it's been growing above the long-term rate. What the Fed sees is the long-term rate, which is really should be understood as like the speed limit, the non-inflationary speed limit for the economy. So yeah, Chad, I think that this is exactly the problem, that the market might have given up just as the economy slows down. And we'll see that more, I think, in the coming months, with especially in the jobs market. That becomes the key, because when you think about what fuels demand, but we'd call it the wealth effect for 2/3 of the economy or 70% of the economy, the wealth effect, which is income and appreciation of our financial assets. and income is jobs. And as the job market slows down, and remember what's going to happen too next month, is the student loans in the U.S. begin accumulating interest again, first payments due in October. And so this might be the last hurrah of the U.S. consumer before a bit before they pull back a little bit into the end of the year.
Mark, elaborate on that a little bit, because we have heard the fact that student loans are, again, going to start accumulating interest. People are going to have to start paying those back. How big of an impact could that have on markets, more specifically, outside of just the economy?
I don't think it would have much impact, except sort of within the context. And the context is consumers have been on a bit of a splurge lately, and household the savings, the excess savings that were accumulated during COVID have been mostly worn down now, and mostly spent down through like actual expenditures and through inflation eating away the value. And so I think it just comes, the resumption of student loans and student loan servicing, I think that the average might be $350 to $400 a month, something along those magnitude for repayment. I think that's going to curb, it's going to curb demand on the margins, but makes it all the more important because of the, what I would expect to be that slowdown coming from the jobs market in any event. You know, I should say too, the, you know, as we look ahead for thinking about what's going to happen in the coming weeks, remember that, this summer we had a debt ceiling issue, and the debt ceiling, if the U.S. didn't come up with a resolution to that, it would have led to default, as we know. But what's happening now is next month is the end of the fiscal year for the U.S. I should say, they have to get together to have the new fiscal year's budget in place by the 1st of October. And that requires an appropriations bill. That's a spending bill. And Congress, it could be another game of brinkmanship. It could go all the way to the end of the month. And what's hanging over us now is not so much a default, but a shutdown, at least a partial shutdown of the government. So that's all looming ahead of us. And I think we have to, so for me, the sequence of events, we get past the employment numbers slowing down, CPI likely to tick up, and then the second half of the month, we'll worry about a government shutdown.
All right. Well, Mark, thank you very much for kind of sharing your insights. We're all just kind of in that wait and see period here, but the rollover in markets has definitely caught some people's attention. And we even had some commentators earlier in the week mention how the earnings season, how reactions to these earning beats have been very different compared to the last quarter, last couple quarters. Mark, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts on this weekend's show. And everyone, stick around. We are going to be right back with a bit more of a focus in the resource and commodity
show. To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it. We specialize in helping the self-employed and people just like you that need affordable health insurance to get it. We have short and long-term health insurance plans, and some even cover dental, vision, and prescription drugs. Don't take a risk with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or now need affordable health insurance, call right now and learn for free how to get it. Listen, affordable health insurance plans for everyone just like you are a free phone call away. So give us a shout right now.
800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. That's 800-670-0946.
USA News. News update. In the headlines this Saturday, don't put away your summer stuff just yet. It's pool and beach weather today. More than 90 million Americans under an excessive heat watch right now, stretching from Texas to Georgia. The National Weather Service says in Shreveport, Louisiana, a record broken Friday with an all-time high of 110 degrees. In New Orleans today, the real feel will be around 108. In Houston, Texas, the real feel up to 111 degrees. To the hot race now for politics in 2024, President Biden asked by a reporter to comment on former President Trump's mugshot. Here's correspondent Brian Shook with details.
Biden told reporters he saw it on television and called his political rival a handsome guy. I'm Brian Shook.
This is USA News.
Hey, Jimmy, turn off the video games. Let's go play some ball.
I'm in the middle of my game. Can't we go later?
Come on, it'll be fun. It will be there when you get back.
Okay, but there's no way you're going to win.
Why don't you grab some water and granola bars, and then we'll see about that.
You can make a difference. Eat smart, play hard. And when you do, your kids will too. A challenge from USDA.
I need answers to my tax questions. Where could I find them?
Need answers? Try our interactive tax assistant on irs.gov/ITA. Simply select your tax questions, provide your information, and it gives you answers. Also, check our help and resources page and try our online tax map. 5,000 tax topics from A to Z. Plus, you can access forms, publications, in a variety of formats.
I had no idea it would destroy my life. But before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And as promised in these last two segments, we are going to shift our focus a little bit more towards the resource sector as we are chatting with Jeff Christian, managing partner at the CPM Group. Now, Jeff, just to kick us off here, broadly, I'm curious to hear what institutions, what large money managers that use the CPM Group for your research in the resource sector, which metals they're looking at. Where have you seen interest from some of these larger potential investors in this space?
We've had a lot of interest this year. And it's a, well, I'll talk about the institutions in a second, but the first thing to address your question, it's across metals. There's a lot of interest in gold and platinum group metals and to a lesser extent silver. And I think that reflects silver's byproduct nature, for it. But we're also seeing a tremendous amount of interest in critical metals, strategic metals, and energy metals. So, we do research on high-purity manganese sulfate that goes into lithium-ion batteries. We do work on lithium and cobalt, nickel and copper, the energy transition metals. And then we do work on specialty metals like molybdenum and tantalum, which is used in semiconductors. And we're actually about to roll out and start introducing work on niobium, which is important in semiconductors and electronics as well. And what we're finding is a lot of institutional investors interested in strategic metals, critical metals, and energy metals. And there's this feeling that a lot of the information they're getting needs to be scrubbed and studied much more closely and carefully, that they shouldn't necessarily rely on the marketing hype that they've been hearing. And you're seeing that, for example, in the broader market, too, where people are starting to say, you know, some of these projections that we've seen about how fast electric vehicles are going to come along are unrealistic. And we need to sort of think about how fast electric vehicles are coming along, where the electricity is going to come from, where the metals are going to come from, and things like that. So we're seeing that. So the first thing is, yeah, you're seeing increased investor interest, institutional investor interest in specialty metals, energy metals, as well as precious metals. They haven't abandoned precious metals. But the other thing that I wanted to mention is you're seeing an acceleration and a shift that we've been watching for years, which is big traditional institutional investment management companies. The biggest ones are thriving. You know, the BlackRocks and such are thriving, and they're growing. But others are not doing as well. They're under a lot of cost pressure and performance pressure. Where you're seeing a tremendous amount of growth is private equity companies and family offices and private equity companies that are kind of hidden because they are wholly owned affiliates of industrial companies that are privately owned by families or you know, groups of people. And you're really seeing, you know, there's been a distinct shift, which we started warning about back in 2001, 2002, but it's accelerated with a shift away from publicly listed companies to privately listed companies and away from public mainstream institutional investment company, management companies toward these private equity shops and family offices.
Well, Jeff, just along those lines of thinking, when you think about the specialty metals, the critical minerals, the energy transition minerals, a lot of them are either what we used to call base metals or they are more niche. And so some of the companies that exist in the space, there's very few of them that cover the specialty metals, for example. There's very few deposits that even make sense economically. So I guess it brings up the question of what you mentioned there at the end. Should some of these companies really be private companies rather than public companies? And can people really trust some of the marketing hype that you get out of the industry about these projections when the companies, in a sense, are price takers, not price makers?
Yeah, you know, exactly. And these are very specialized metals. They have extreme, you know, across commodities, if you're a publicly listed mining company, you have regulations that require you to disclose information, and you have an economic incentive, which is that you're trying to stimulate investors buying your shares. But if you are a secondary refiner of a metal, or if you're a fabricator, there are no regulations that say you have to tell people how much metal you're refining and recovering from scrap, or how much metal you're using in your products. And there's a economic incentive to not say that. You know, the last thing an auto company wants to say is we're shifting back toward platinum away from palladium, because they'll have investors buying platinum and selling palladium and skewing the prices in a way that is not in their interest, right? And it's secretive, and it's across commodities. I mean, even in oil and gas, despite what people think, you know, every country that measures its gas oil demand actually measures it as a shadow of demand. It's like, you know, well, how much are we producing and importing? Less, how much are we exporting, and changes in inventories, and that is our apparent demand. And that's true across all these commodities. So you have extremely opaque markets and extremely asymmetrical markets. And as you said, in the case of many of these metals, byproduct metals are not a lot of deposits. So it's very difficult for an institutional investor to say, well, is this a good investment? And, you know, when somebody comes to them and they say, here's my confidential information memorandum, I'm looking to raise $500 million to develop a mine in vanadium or niobium or tantalum or lithium or whatever, they say, okay, where do I get independent verification? And it's very difficult, you know. And, you know, quite frankly, we had an unpleasant situation where somebody that was trying to raise a lot of money in one metal has been we've been their advisor for 15 years. One of the companies that is thinking about investing in them gave our research to a company that's trying to compete with us, you know, and said, hey, is this accurate? So this company that had no information on to speak of on this particular metal market all of a sudden has all of our information that we've developed over the last 15 years. Thank you very much. You know, but that's the state of play in these markets. They're very small, they're very opaque, and they're very asymmetrical in that some people know a lot and a lot of people know very little, and there's a lot of guessing that goes on as to what supply and demand are and what it's going to be in 5, 10, 20 years from now. And that makes it very difficult for an investor to say, oh, okay, I want to invest in a mine that has an initial mine life of 10 years and a probable mine life of 50 years that is going to be making commodities, metals, that are going to be critical to the energy transition over the next 50 years. Just the level of uncertainty and the lack of concrete information that's reliable is really daunting. And we're seeing that, because we're seeing a steady stream of private equity shops, family offices, and institutional investors coming along and saying, hey, you got to help us here, because people are telling us we should be investing in, you know, vanadium, manganese, and molybdenum or tantalum, and help us make sense of it.
Well, fair enough, though, Jeff. It's hard enough for people and investors to predict 3-6 months out, let alone 20, 30 years out, and especially for a sector that is advancing and changing this whole battery storage and infrastructure around that, as well as energy grid. It's all growing and all changing quite quickly, so it's hard to know exactly what's going to stand out, but... Well, I think we all see that this change is coming, and this change continues to get a lot of money thrown at it. I think that's why we see more generalists coming to the sector. Sounds like you're seeing that as well. Hey, Jeff, we're having you back on next segment. Everyone stick around. We're going to be right back, continuing to focus on the resource sector.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to DanPilla.com to order your copy. That's DanPilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to DanPilla.com. That's DanPilla.com.
Radio? Why should I advertise on radio? There's nothing to look at, no pictures.
Listen, you can do things on radio you couldn't possibly do on TV.
That'll be the day.
All right, watch this. Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream for the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue the mountain. Okay, 25,000 cheering extras.
Now, you want to try that on television?
Well...
You see, radio is a very special medium because it stretches the imagination.
Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, silverlungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at silverlungs.com. That's silverlungs.com.
Nothing.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
All right, here we are, final segment of the weekend edition of the KE Report, and we are continuing to chat with Jeff Christian, managing partner of the CPM Group. Jeff, I want your comments on this big picture concept and potential of a commodities super cycle, either just getting going, about to get going, what have you. We have heard a number of commentators say that, one, because of how undervalued commodities, metals broadly are to financial assets, well, that could correct, but also simply demand. And tying it in with that whole green transition, this green revolution, how do you define a commodity super cycle, and do you think we could be in one, even extending past some of the larger, already well-known metals?
No, you know, when the term commodity super cycle was coined, like around 2005, 2007, we said that was nothing but more than marketing hype, and it still is. If you want to understand what's going on, this is economics 101. And it's interesting because if you look at like our, you know, we have 10-year copper projections, supply, demand, and price projections. If you look at our copper demand projections, we don't have it growing sharply over the next 5 years. We have it growing consistently at modest paces. So I think that the commodity super cycle, which has been dusted off in the last couple of years, is just marketing hype. The reality is that the world needs more commodities. There has been a paucity of investment, and much of the investment has been poorly allocated, so it hasn't done as much as people might like. We may have talked, like last month, about rare earths. You mentioned rare earths earlier. And, you know, we've been doing some work. You can't get enough rare earths to make all of the motors, magnets for all of the motors and all of the electric vehicles that people say they're going to be building over the next 10, 15 years. So our view is that means that the magnet manufacturers and the motor manufacturers must be looking for an alternative to rare earth magnets. And they are. That means that capital that will be deployed into rare earth elements, all of those rare earth investments may not pay out because it may be capital misallocation. Those rare earths may not be needed. So I think that that's the kind of stuff that you're watching out for. And that's the kind of questions and answers that institutional investors are coming to us and asking us about.
Well, Jeff, I completely agree that with the commodity space, they're all kind of their own unique value drivers. They're all kind of jostling up and down independent because they could be replaced. There's that substitution risk you just mentioned. There's times where there's a projection that there's a big need and maybe that doesn't play out. But when people talk about the commodity super cycle, somebody like Jeffrey Gundlach has posted a chart, or it was a year or two ago, showing just how undervalued something like the CRB index was, or the equal weighted commodity index even more so, compared to asset prices of equities, U.S. equities or real estate or bonds and other asset classes. And they were making the case that from an asset class standpoint, the commodities had more room to run to the upside to get back to more of a reversion of the mean. That's the way I've always understood the commodity super cycle. What would you say about that concept, that commodities may be undervalued relative to other assets?
There are a couple things. First off, the reversion to the mean isn't about price reversion. It's about return reversion, that the return on an investment should revert toward some long-term mean return. So it doesn't mean that the price has to rise. It means that the returns have to rise, and that could happen at a lower price. The other thing is, if you look at commodity prices over time, and you can look at specific commodity prices like copper, or you can look at the CRB index or other commodity indices, real prices of commodities tend to decline. And that's because, starting with the Industrial Revolution, technological changes primarily, initially, are on the supply side of markets. So, you know, you've seen this enormous explosion, and people can look at it now. Look at this tremendous growth of copper demand over the last 150, 200 years, or iron, or nickel, or gold, or silver. There's been this tremendous growth in demand, but there's been an even more dramatic growth in supply, and the result has been that the real price of most commodities has fallen due to technological changes. So the idea that there's a commodity super cycle that's going to take nominal prices higher, well, you can argue that. But when you start talking about real returns and real prices, history suggests that technological change will probably lead to more efficient supply of commodities in the long run and lower real prices. And there's another thing. I mean, people do this stuff, and it's crazy. It's just like you'll see a guy, and he'll say, if you look at silver, it's undervalued relative to everything. You know, silver relative to housing prices, silver relative to food, silver relative to the price of an automobile. You know, the price of silver relative to all of these other assets and goods and services is at a historic low. And they imply that there should be a sharp increase in silver prices to play catch up with the rest of the world. But that ignores the reality of shifting demand and supply conditions. And the reality is that silver prices have never had a good correlation with housing prices or food prices or automobile prices. And there's never been a good correlation, and there's no reason to think that there ought to be a correlation now or in the future. And the reality is that, yeah, we're using less silver per GDP than we used to because we're using other stuff. You know, I sometimes talk about American cordage, like, and don't hold me to the years, but I want to say that in 1890, American cordage was like the biggest market cap on the American Stock Exchange. And that they made rope for tall ships. By 1894, they were bankrupt because no one was building tall ships. They were building steamships. Yeah, you know, and I'm not saying that silver is going to be obsolete. What I'm saying is that you have to pay attention to the long-term supply trends, long-term demand trends, and you have to have a realistic view of what they mean for the price, because it's quite possible, and it's been proven over the last 200 years of history, that a lot of raw material prices will fall relative to everything else. Look at food prices. You know, people complain, and yes, food prices are rising sharply now. But look at the price of any type of food now compared to 200 years ago. Even though, you know, and what you'll find is that, A, the supply is several hundredfold larger, the consumption is several hundred times larger, and the real price is a fraction of what it used to be.
All right, Jeff, before we wrap it up, though, I want you to take a step back, and through all the conversations you have had and all these different metals and commodities we have touched on, which ones do you think have the best setup for investors, whether on the company side or simply just the underlying price?
I like gold, and that's because it's a financial asset more than a commodity. In terms of commodities and companies and prices, I do think that copper is good. What we're seeing right now with the energy transition, cobalt's had its day. Manganese should do better, but it's high purity manganese metal and high purity manganese sulfate. These are chemicals. It's not so much manganese ore. The same is true with nickel. It's not so much nickel metal as nickel, high purity nickel sulfate that's going to really be important. I worry about rare earths. You know, we tended to tell our clients to avoid rare earths for the last 15, 20 years, and we're continuing to say that. I do like copper. I do like aluminum. I do like titanium. And I like molybdenum, because molybdenum is an interesting one. You need molybdenum for drill pipe for oil and gas. You need molybdenum for the steel in transmission pipes. And you also need molybdenum for things like the towers in windmills and other applications of new energy technology. So molybdenum stands to benefit from both the old energy system and potential future energy systems.
All right, Jeff, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate you taking that time to jump all around to a number of different commodities and resources and share what you're hearing from some of the large institutions and even some of those family offices as well. Everybody, thank you for tuning in to this weekend show. Please be sure to go back through our website, kereport.com, and podcast, The KE Report, to listen to all the daily editorials and company updates we recorded throughout the week. And as always, keep in touch with us through email. We love hearing your thoughts on the markets and on our guests. Jeff, everybody, thank you for taking time with us on this weekend. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the mineral doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for life too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.